This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehia Iswuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight:
with famine devastating parts of South Sudan, aid agencies say an ongoing influx of South Sudanese refugees into Uganda is straining its food resources.
That's VOA's Jill Craig reporting from Nairobi. Details next.
Also, according to the latest global report from the International Narcotics Control Board, Africa is a growing market for both legal and illegal drugs.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story: with famine devastating parts of South Sudan, aid agencies say an ongoing influx of South Sudanese refugees into Uganda is straining its food resources. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
Uganda has taken about half of the more than 1.5 million South Sudanese people who have fled into neighboring countries, as South Sudan has become Africa's largest refugee crisis, resulting from more than 3 years of civil war. As the refugees flee conflict, sexual violence, looting, and food insecurity, highlighted by the recent announcement of famine in two counties of Unity State, they're finding that aid agencies are struggling to provide them with enough food in the Ugandan refugee settlements. Charlie Yaxley is the spokesperson for the United Nations Refugee Agency in Uganda. Yaxley says resource constraints meant that last year food rations had to be cut in half for all refugees who arrived in Uganda prior to mid-2015, with exceptions made for those who were considered vulnerable.
Well, we continue to operate in a context of chronic, severe underfunding. Last year, the humanitarian appeal for South Sudanese refugees in Uganda was $251 million, and we received just 40% of that money. And that has a real direct impact on humanitarian organizations' abilities to deliver critical life-saving aid.
With thousands of South Sudanese refugees continuing to arrive in Uganda every day, including more than 120,000 new arrivals in the first 2 months of this year, aid agencies are struggling to keep up. Chalice McDonough is a spokeswoman for the UN World Food Program in East Africa.
The resourcing situation is so bad that it is possible that we will have to extend those cuts. We have been on the brink of having to do that several times in the last month and have managed to avoid it. But we just are simply not getting the resources that we need to keep pace with the incredibly large number of new refugees that have arrived in the country in the last 6 months.
It costs the UN about $13 million per month to feed the more than 700,000 primarily South Sudanese refugees now living in Uganda who depend on food assistance, a figure which McDonough says is not being met. Approximately 200,000 of the refugees are receiving reduced rations. But despite the resource challenges, Yaxley says that Uganda has an incredibly progressive approach to asylum. It provides refugees with plots of land to build new homes and grow crops, and they live next to the Ugandan host community. They can find work, start a business, and are free to move around the country. He says the host community has welcomed refugees with open arms, but that others need to do more.
It's key to stress that this is not a crisis Uganda and neighboring countries can tackle alone. It's vital that the international community come together with their resources and expertise to, first of all, ensure that humanitarian appeals are fully funded, but also to address the reasons why people are fleeing in the first place.
And because refugee crises are impacting so many places around the world, including Syria and Afghanistan, resources are already stretched thin, says McDonough.
We try very hard not to prioritize one hungry person over another because of where they live. But the problem is that the needs globally are so enormous that there just aren't right now the resources within the international community to meet those needs.
The government of Uganda and UNHCR, the UN's refugee agency, work with humanitarian organizations to coordinate the refugee response at the border entry points, providing clean water and medical screenings that include examining children for malnutrition and providing high-energy biscuits for people who are likely malnourished. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
In South Sudan, the aid organization Save the Children says the lives of 1,500 children are at risk after its compound and warehouse were looted Saturday in the village of Wat in Jonglei State. It happened when the compound was attacked by armed groups and community members. Save the Children is assessing the situation before deciding when to return to Wat. Country Director Peter Walsh told reporter Tito Justin it's not clear which armed groups were involved.
They certainly were armed, along with many others that weren't armed from the community.
In your organization, what was destroyed exactly?
Well, the reports suggest that there were over 1,000 people that actually invaded Save the Children's compound in Wat after already looting and damaging the compounds of two other organizations. And essentially everything has gone or been destroyed. If you go there, it almost looks post-apocalyptic.
Can you mention for me some of the things that were looted in the compound?
Our nutrition supplies, which include life-saving food, supplementary food for children, medical supplies, including life-saving drugs, school books, school materials that we took over a year to procure using donor funding have been pulled out of the container and thrown all over the area. And then our office space, you know, windows smashed, doors taken off the hinges, doors removed, a rubble, a knife has been used to split it. Yes, generally it's a very big mess.
The food items for the children, how many children are supposed to benefit from those food items?
So just for nutrition alone, we were supporting over 1,500 children who are acutely malnourished, who need that supplementary feeding to stop them from slipping into life-threatening hunger, which we call severe acute malnutrition.
I understand Save the Children also went on ground. People from Juba went on ground to assess the situation currently there. How is it at the moment?
Yeah, so I was in Wat yesterday, along with four other international organizations and one national. And we met with the community, with the chiefs and head chief, and also with the local authorities. And, you know, there was a profound remorse. Both the chiefs and the local authorities apologized profusely. And then we came together with an agreement to form a community work group, which is people with particular skills, such as carpentry, house building. And then under the leadership of the chiefs, with the support of the NGOs, it's been committed that this team will go from each NGO compound, do a mass clear up, but also repair the damage the senseless damage that has been done.
Describe for me the situation of the children in Wat at this moment, since everything was looted.
Well, children's lives are at risk, more so than they've ever been, given the current looting. You know, I've talked about 1,500 plus children that we're supporting, but if they fell into severe acute malnutrition, we would have to refer to them to something called a stabilization center. Unfortunately, the only stabilization center in Wat has also been looted and vandalized, which means the children are really at risk and would need to go on foot to Lankian or Walgak at the moment to get any services.
In that case, what is urgently needed?
Well, urgently needed is for the commitment that was verbally given by the community, by the chiefs and the authorities to put that into action, conduct the clear-up, do the repairs. They have to reinvigorate confidence with us, but also the donors. You know, and right across South Sudan right now, funding is a premium, and actions like this only cause complications. You know, for humanitarian agencies to counter famine and save lives, we really need unimpeded access and we need protection. That's protection of our staff, but also our assets and our program items. Otherwise, we're going to struggle to counter this famine.
Peter Walsh is country director for Save the Children in South Sudan. He spoke to reporter Tito Justin.
Coming up on 15 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Egypt's top appeals court has acquitted former Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak in connection with the killing of protesters during the 2011 uprising. Mubarak, who's 88 years old and ailing, had denied any involvement in the protesters' deaths.
Africa is a growing market for all types of drugs, both legal and illegal. That's according to the latest global report from the International Narcotics Control Board. The Vienna-based organization links the trend to regional drug trafficking and the increased availability of drugs. Reporter Kerry Skyring is covering the story from Vienna. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kapawa first about the illegal drug of choice in Africa.
Well, it's quite clear that cannabis is the main drug of abuse in Africa. In fact, Africans using cannabis at more than twice the global average consumption rate. There's illegal production in Africa also, and that's a major challenge. According to the Narcotics Control Board, the continent accounting for 14% of the worldwide seizures of illegal cannabis. But it also highlights increasing heroin use in some countries, mainly in the east of Africa. Africa also presents a problem in terms of lack of data, particularly on the use of new illicit psychoactive substances. They have very little data on the extent of the drug abuse in many countries of Africa, and particularly the number of people in treatment. What can be said, though, from this report is that the rate of heroin abuse, based on data from a limited number of countries, is about the same in Africa as the global average. Now, that's taken on a very small data sample.
Does the report mention any particular drug trafficking routes in Africa?
Yes, it does, and it raises some alarm bells regarding drug trafficking. Opiates from Afghanistan are increasingly being trafficked to both the east and the west of Africa. So this is trafficking in opiates across the Indian Ocean through East Africa is on the rise, and it's reportedly associated with an increase in container trade in East Africa. So what they mean is it's coming in via shipping containers across the Indian Ocean. There's also an increased involvement of nationals from Africa in drug trafficking incidents and people being arrested worldwide for drug trafficking. And it gives this example. The yearly value of cocaine transiting West Africa is now estimated at $1.25 billion, a lot of that going into Europe and also into Asia. However, West Africa is also increasingly seeing the local manufacture of synthetic drugs. Now, these are destined mainly for Asia. That trend is particularly notable, says the report, in Guinea and in Nigeria. And they're also raising alarms not only on the increase in trafficking through Asia, but the increasing availability and abuse of drugs in many African countries themselves, and the rise in the manufacture of synthetic drugs on the African continent. So quite a few alarm bells being rung by the INCB in this report.
Now, I understand the report also takes a look at African women and drugs.
It takes a global look at women and drugs, and many of the things it says apply to drug taking in Africa. It says it's seeing an increasing number of women using drugs, particularly young women, and particularly in prison populations. And it also says few countries, and this applies especially to Africa, few countries provide adequate treatment for drug-dependent women. Increasingly, women are being arrested and being incarcerated for drug crimes, but the INCB says they rarely have access to appropriate treatment in prison or rehabilitation. Also, and perhaps this is less applicable to Africa, but there's not enough data really for them to make this distinction, but women are more likely to abuse prescription drugs than men, and there is some evidence showing women are more likely to be prescribed narcotics and anxiety-related drugs and to abuse those drugs or be overprescribed those drugs. That's particularly more applicable to women than to men.
Does the report make any recommendations to deal with these problems?
It does. It really says not enough effort is being put into education about drugs, into minimizing the risk of exposure to drugs at a young age. It says this is where governments need to be active in preventing the manufacture of illicit drugs and preventing the trafficking in drugs, but also to ensure that young people particularly are not exposed to illicit drugs and drug abuse. It links drug abuse particularly to poverty in many parts of the world and to conflict areas where people people are particularly under stress, where society and institutions begin to break down, there are major drug problems. When it comes to drug punishment, it is proposing that countries consider education programs, rehabilitation programs, rather than incarceration. It makes the point too many people are in prisons on non-violent drug crimes, and they shouldn't be there. It also recommends that the death penalty not be applied for non-violent drug crimes. It says this is not something that really helps the drug problem. It creates more suffering and does not solve the problem.
That's reporter Kerry Skyring from Vienna. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kepawa.
UN Security Council diplomats have departed on a mission to the Lake Chad Basin in West Africa to see firsthand the security challenges and dire humanitarian situation. From the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir reports that the envoys will travel to Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria on a four-day mission.
Since Boko Haram launched its insurgency to create an Islamic State in northeastern Nigeria in 2009, it has caused severe humanitarian suffering that has spread to neighboring countries in the Lake Chad Basin. The United Nations says more than 2 million people have been forcibly displaced from northeastern Nigeria since the height of the violence in 2014, and nearly 190,000 have become refugees in Cameroon, Niger, and Chad. British Ambassador Matthew Rycroft, who heads the council this month and is co-leading the mission with France and Senegal, told VOA that the council is serious about preventing a worsening of the situation.
And we want to shine a spotlight on those issues. We want to encourage donors to step up to help tackle the humanitarian issues. And we want to encourage the governments of the region to continue their robust activity against Boko Haram.
The delegation will arrive in the region just days after the UN raised the alarm that northeastern Nigeria is at risk of famine. More than 5 million people are severely food insecure in parts of Borno, Adamawa, and Yobe states, and are at risk of a full-fledged famine within the next 6 months. While in Cameroon and Nigeria, council members also will visit camps for the displaced. In each of the four countries, they will meet with senior government officials, local leaders, and members of civil society. In Chad's capital, N'Djamena, the envoys will visit the headquarters of the multinational joint task force that is combating Boko Haram. Rycroft said a main purpose of the visit is for the council to see what the United Nations and the international community are doing in the region and what more needs to be done. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
In Zimbabwe, the process to name a new Chief Justice of the Supreme Court has become mired in legal challenges and politics. Sebastian Mwamfu has the story from Harare.
At his farewell party Wednesday night, the outgoing Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Godfrey Chijikau-Siku, was asked if he had any disappointments in his career.
Yes, there are times when things are not going the way they should. One of them is the way we are quarreling about my successor. it's a big disappointment, but it's nothing that we can't overcome. In my view, there really is no dispute, there really is no issue, and with the passage of time, things are going to fall into place. I would have wanted to leave one very united judiciary that is fearless, independent, and with a backbone of steel.
His retirement did not come as a surprise. The law requires the Chief Justice to retire at the age of 70, which Chijikau-Siku reached in February. 2 months prior, the Judicial Service Commission started public interviews to replace him. The commission then sent President Robert Mugabe a list of three final candidates that by law he can choose from. But from nowhere, Romeo Zibani, a law student, surfaced and successfully challenged the process at the High Court. That ruling was then dismissed by the Supreme Court after an appeal. Zibani is represented by ruling party member of parliament and lawyer Jonathan Samukange. They have appealed to the Constitutional Court to uphold the High Court's ruling.
A Chief Justice is different from an ordinary judge. A Chief Justice does not only wear a judicial hat, he also wears a political hat. And that is why it is important that we have a Chief Justice who can work in harmony with His Excellency the President. The President must choose whom he wants to work with. It is like marriage. You marry someone whom you know you can stay with and work with in harmony for the interest of Zimbabwe as a whole.
Prior to 2013, the President had the power to handpick judges. But that year, Zimbabweans overwhelmingly voted to pass a new constitution that included this new procedure. President Mugabe has made no public statements on the Chief Justice question, but a request to amend the constitution has been initiated by his Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Love Momaduku, a law professor at the University of Zimbabwe, is optimistic the issue will be sorted out by end of July, or President Mugabe can be challenged in court to appoint a substantive Chief Justice.
I think the President wants to wait for the constitutional amendment. The constitutional amendment provides for an appointment by the President, which is not subject to any controls by anybody. So his president's love for total control of the country, which is always his approach to the way he governs.
Maduku says politics are tangled up in this dispute with elections just a year away. The Supreme Court would make a final ruling on electoral disputes. Mugabe has announced his intention to run for re-election. But as the 93-year-old leader advances in age, debate over his succession grows louder, and the Chief Justice could one day have a say in that. Local analysts say the country's current leadership would prefer a war veteran as the new Chief Justice. None of the three candidates proposed by the commission have that credential. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Military officials have been brought in to help search for a 5-year-old boy who fell into an abandoned mine shaft near Johannesburg. Richard Thole was playing near his home in Boksburg Saturday when he fell into the 140-meter deep shaft. The boy fell in an area known as Jerusalem, where makeshift homes sit precariously over old gold mines. Authorities have urged residents to move away from the area because it is not safe. Rescue efforts to find the boy have been hampered by falling rocks, and emergency responders say the deep shaft may also contain lethal gas and acidic water.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America. VOA.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Bate, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. and our 5 minutes newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss International Women's Day. It's also known as the United Nations Day for Women's Rights and International Peace, celebrating women's achievements throughout history. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa. 30.